This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
We often call our dogs our fur babies. More and more, we're shuttling them from play days at doggy day camp or heading to the dog park so they can romp with their friends and get their yah-yahs out of their systems. They're often treated to time at the spa for a day of beauty and grooming, more often than we afford ourselves the same luxury. But even if your dog is a homebody and only goes for a spin around the block, it and its more social canine companions could be exposed to nasty respiratory diseases. Maybe you've heard of something called canine flu on the news. Is it kennel cough or this newfangled condition called canine infectious respiratory disease complex? Now that's a name with nothing to sneeze at. Can you catch it from your dog? What can you do to protect your pet? To discuss all these questions is Dr. Karen Stasiak. She is the veterinary medical lead for biologicals at Zoetis Pet Care. We're going to be right back after this short break. So get your Kleenex, start sneezing now, get it over with. We'll be right back.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy? Come to Dynavite for help.
Order a 90-day supply of Dynavite.
Dynavite for life.
Pick up two tubes of Dogasuds.
Get the third tube free.
Peppermint, tea tree, lavender, Dogasuds shampoo.
Made with all-natural coconut, jojoba, aloe. Great for healthy skin and soft, shiny coats.
But no itchy, harsh chemicals.
Lather up, rinse away.
Try Dogasuds. Buy two, get one free.
At Dynavite.com.
Dynovite.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Stasiak, thank you so much. This is something that I'm running into too frequently at my practice.
Yeah, we are seeing more cases and hearing more about it. I do think this new flu, in addition to other pathogens, is really causing us to be more aware, and our pet owners to be more aware with our social dogs.
So as I was saying in the introduction, sometimes veterinary terminology can be really confusing. So this canine infectious respiratory disease complex, how is that different from kennel cough, or is it just kennel cough? I know my clients are so confused, like, wait, I thought it was kennel cough.
Yeah, and you know, we were used to that sort of catch-all term, kennel cough. But the new terminology, I think, by its very name, ending in complex, is more accurately describing just how complicated it can be. It's not just in dogs that go to the kennel. So I think changing the name is helpful because some people think, well, I don't kennel my dog, therefore my dog is not at risk. And so this more, you know, sort of longer name really describing the multiple pathogens that can cause dogs to have respiratory infections, whether it's bacteria or viruses, and certainly the host test factors. You know, some dogs have better immune system than others. Some dogs have chronic illness that makes them more susceptible to respiratory infections. So I think the name, although long, is kind of capturing what exactly it is. It's complicated.
So a dog just doesn't need to be kennel, because oftentimes people say, well, my dog hasn't been in the kennel. So how could it possibly have contracted this disease? So it doesn't go to doggy day camp. It doesn't go to the beauty shop. It's just a dog that walks the neighborhood and maybe just in a condo situation out to the common greens and back into the home again. What level of risk is there for each of these different types of social dogs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we think of the dogs that go to daycare and grooming, they're around other dogs, they're obviously at high risk, but because dogs can be most contagious before they show symptoms, they will be able to come into contact with dogs that don't necessarily look sick, and so that can set them up for picking up an infection when you least expect it. Certainly, we know these pathogens can live in the environment. So walking down the street, getting in a service elevator, you know, drinking out of a community water bowl somewhere, or even dogs that make noses across the fence line have been able to transmit some of these respiratory pathogens. So even if your dog's just a backyard guy, if his neighbor's dogs get out and about, you know, dogs can really be at risk for this.
Wow. So they can go nose to nose, they can slurp out of that water bottle, they can be in an elevator where another dog had been. Are these various viruses, what makes up the whole complex? Maybe I should back up. So this canine infectious respiratory disease complex, what makes up that complex?
So there are several different bacteria pathogens. Probably the one people most think of is Bordetella. That's the typical kennel cough as previously described. But there are some other bacteria such as Mycoplasma or Streptococcus zoo that can cause bad respiratory infections. And in the virus family, we've got two different kinds of influenza, distemper, parainfluenza, and some other less common coronaviruses and just a whole variety, actually. The list can go on for quite a ways. And, you know, really we've got vaccines for some of these. And the idea is that if you protect dogs for, you know, the diseases for which we have vaccines, they'll be less likely to get ill if they come into contact with a virus that we don't have a vaccine for, a bacteria that we don't have a vaccine to prevent, sort of prevent that complex co-infection, if you will.
I mean, it's always so scary when you're just taking your dog to day camp. And if you're I always tell people, it's somewhat like having a really healthy child and it's been at home with you and now it's going to daycare because you're going to be going back to work, whatever. And if you have a sick child, you're not going to want to take it to daycare because you don't want other children to get sick. But you were mentioning that oftentimes these pets will come in contact with a pet who is actually ill, shedding the virus, but they don't look ill. I'd love to have you elaborate on that one.
Yeah, that's, you know, when I would have, when I was in practice, would have, you know, my clients tell me, I'll just keep my dog away from sick dogs. It doesn't really work that way because whether it's bacteria or the viruses, they will be shedding most of those pathogens before they show any clinical signs. And, you know, a few days later, after your dog has either been where that dog has been, you know, whether it's in the pet store, walk down the street, or, you know, at the kennel, they can pick up this pathogen and then start showing clinical signs themselves. So it's tricky, and I don't know that a lot of pet owners know that the risks. I mean, who could blame them, right? You assume if you stay away from sick people, you're going to not get sick. And so, of course, I think they think the same for their dog.
And you were mentioning the signs. So if you have a pet that is showing these, can you differentiate what may be causing your dog's respiratory signs just from the signs that you're seeing? So is one more prone to having sneezing, one more prone to having goopy eyes, one more prone to having a cough, depending on what the cause is?
You know, all of the pathogens present clinically very similar. You know, they'll have, much like us when we have a respiratory infection, coughing, sneezing, runny nose and eyes, fever, you know, not feeling very energetic, not having a good appetite. Those can all present, you know, no matter what the primary cause is, they'll all kind of look the same. And, you know, certainly we know some of these pathogens are more likely to lead to pneumonia. If you have infection with more than one pathogen, you're more likely to develop pneumonia, which, you know, those dogs become severely ill and require hospitalization and oxygen, and they can be left with chronic bronchitis as a result of having these infections. Or, you know, some dogs have even died from some of these pathogens and outbreaks that we've been seeing.
You mentioned outbreaks, and I find it fascinating that you look and you can have parts of the United States that seem to be totally free from the canine infectious respiratory disease complex and some that is just a hotbed. What makes a difference?
I think unpredictable movement of dogs contributes to that. We know that there are rescue groups that will move dogs around the country. They'll import dogs from flu endemic countries. And so, you know, we do see little hot spots that pop up with mobile dog populations. But I also think, you know, there are a lot of veterinarians that don't necessarily test. So, you know, when you ask them, are you seeing coughing dogs? They say yes, but they're not going through and actually testing to see what is causing this uptick in coughing dogs. And so it's not making the media. Nobody hears about it unless you just are traveling around and talking to veterinarians. You know, I think we see coughing dogs all over. It's just a matter of who's testing and reporting it.
When you have a client that comes in and, you know, I tell them, oh, yes, I believe your dog could have canine influenza or could have one of these other respiratory diseases, I would like to go ahead and test your pet. Is it going to make a difference on how you're going to treat it? Probably not. And it's hard to get that next step for them to say, yes, I want to know, I want to help my other canine friends, you know, where I take my dog to the dog park. How do I get over that hurdle of we need to know?
Yeah, and I think that you're absolutely right. You know, for the individual dog in that moment, do you need to know or are you going to treat them all the same? I think testing dogs when they're not responding to your treatment, when they're not getting any better, may help you decide as a veterinarian that you're going to change your treatment or to know how long to keep them, you know, isolated from other dogs. But, you know, more thinking about a broader population of dogs, I think when you vaccinate dogs well and you start seeing illness in vaccinated dogs, that's really when we need to be testing and doing more, trying to figure out what the pathogen is, because we might find that we have a new pathogen, just like we did with canine influenza back in 2015. It was, you know, well-vaccinated dogs were getting sick and nobody knew why. It was because, well, that we didn't have a vaccine for that pathogen. So I think so long as dogs are well-vaccinated, if those are dogs getting sick or they're presenting more ill with pneumonia-type symptoms or they're just not responding as you would expect, those are probably the dogs that really need to be tested. You know, mildly ill dogs that are probably going to get better, I don't know if I would test them necessarily unless I just thought I was seeing a large number of those dogs, and therefore maybe it's a new pathogen of some kind.
So, Dr. Stasiak, you mentioned that oftentimes you have a dog who is shedding these viruses, bacteria, etc., and they look healthy. So how am I supposed to know, or is it easy to elucidate which of these pathogens is causing the problems? Who do I test? When do I test them?
Yeah, you know, I think if you have dogs presenting to the hospital with, you know, clinical signs of a respiratory infection or coughing or sneezing at nasal discharge, they don't feel good, the earlier you can test them, the better. So signs, I say less than 4 days, somewhere certainly less than 7 days is the optimal time if you're going to try to figure out what the primary cause is. And, you know, most doctors are sending what's called a PCR swab. That's just looking for the genetic material of the bacteria or the virus. And it's just a nasal swab or some kind of combination between a nasal, ocular, and a throat swab to send that off. But, you know, some dogs carry, you know, these organisms in their nose and they're not sick. And, you know, so you can get false positives from those. Dogs that get intranasal vaccines, you can see those organisms positive for a while post-vaccination. So it starts to get tricky. You know, dogs with pneumonia, when you're looking more at a culture to try and figure out what bacteria it is to choose the right antibiotics, you know, those are going to be for your sicker dogs. But chest x-rays, looking for pneumonia, those are some of the other tests that, you know, a veterinarian may want to do depending on how sick your dog is.
It can just be so devastating for these people are coming in with a pet that, boy, 2 days ago seemed fine and now is just sneezing, coughing. You can tell that everyone's having a hard time in the family because usually there's these large bags underneath the owner's eyes going, nobody's getting sleep. We need to do something about this. I'm chatting right now with Dr. Karen Stasiak. She is the veterinary medical lead for biologicals at Zoetis Pet Care. We're going to be right back after this short break and talk about ways that you can help protect your pet. Well, first, we're going to treat your pet and then protect it so it never happens. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's designerpetsweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit designerpetsweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. designerpetsweaters.com.
Let's Talk Pets.
Let's Talk Pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Stasiak, it just seems so frustrating for pet owners to try to do the best. We recommend certain vaccines for our dogs and cats depending on their lifestyle. And oftentimes when you're telling them about a new vaccine, it's like, doc, you're just trying to make money. You know, I haven't really heard of this disease. Why do I need to do it? Is my dog really at risk? I would love to know your professional opinion as to what's the best way for people to think about why I need all these various vaccines and the fear that people have about vaccines.
Yeah, you know, I think that, it was easier back in the day when, dogs just went to kennels and came home and that was it. So you knew to vaccinate kennel dogs and that's why you call it kennel cough. But now, dogs live a very social lifestyle. They go to daycare, they go to dog parks, and if they're not going, their neighbor dog is. And so dogs get out and about. And I think, for them to have a safe experience, an experience where they're not going to get sick, using the vaccines that we have to cover for the respiratory diseases, considering there's many pathogens that we can't prevent, that will help sort of decrease disease severity. If they do pick up one of these pathogens that we don't have vaccines for, a lot of times people talk about them being lifestyle vaccines, and I think that's accurate, except we have to accept that our dogs live great lifestyles now, and they're all out doing their dog thing and getting to spend time with their owners, which I think is wonderful. I've had people say, well, just don't take them anywhere, but that doesn't really work because we've had dogs getting flu across fence lines around the country as well. So I think, knowing that, having taken care of dogs that had a vaccine-preventable disease, for me, probably some of the hardest medicine I've had to do, because you look at them and go, gosh, I could have prevented this. And it's heartbreaking. And, for the dog that goes on to severe illness or needs hospitalization, it is hard for families. And it's, the dogs just are miserable. And it's hard to see that in their eyes when they get sick like that. So, for all the diseases that dogs can get, there's really a handful of vaccines to prevent those. And so I encourage owners to consider that preventative medicine is way better experience than trying to treat, a dog once they're sick.
So treatment, you had mentioned, depending on the severity of the illness, it may just be stay at home or could be hospitalized for aggressive therapy, especially if it's turned into pneumonia. They may need oxygen, intravenous fluids, intravenous antibiotics. And as you said, some dogs do succumb to these diseases. But if a dog has had one of these pathogens, how long are they contagious? Because that's always a question. Oh, I need to get my dog back to the dog park, because if I don't let him run around and be a squirrel for an hour, three times a week at least, I can't live with them. So
yeah.
when can they go back to doggy daycare? When can they go back to the dog park?
Yeah, frustratingly, 2 weeks beyond resolution of clinical signs. So for some dogs, even if it's just, they don't get terribly sick, but they're still coughing, flu virus can be shed for up to 3 weeks. So you're looking at, keeping them away from other dogs and their activities for 2 weeks beyond resolution of the clinical signs. So that could be 4 or 5 weeks for some of these dogs, which is a very long time.
So again, that's just not going back to daycare or going to the dog park. You want to walk your dog. I got to take him for a walk. I have to take him a walk around the neighborhood. Still not a good idea, because your dog is leaving its little packages of pathogens wherever it's going.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's a challenge for pet owners to know what to do in that situation. And it's, we know those dogs need to be active or they're going to be bouncing off the walls. Once they start feeling a little better, they're going to be begging to go for walks. So it's hard to say no to those guys.
So Dr. Stasiak, I know one of the biggest pushbacks I get from clients when I say, I have this new vaccine, I strongly recommend it, canine influenza virus vaccine, it will help protect your dog. And as soon as they hear a flu vaccine, they go, doc, I was getting my flu vaccine every year. We know it doesn't work most of the time, or they believe it doesn't work. I got the vaccine and it made me sick. I got the vaccine and I still got the flu. you being this lead for biologicals at Zoetis Pet Care, what is the best response that a veterinarian can give a pet owner?
And, you know, the human vaccine experience for flu, like, I understand why pet owners think that, because I think we all think that. But human flu has been around for hundreds of years. It's had a very long time to slowly mutate and turn into different strains that are, you know, we have to try and predict what is going to be seen this year and get it right in the flu vaccine that we have. Now, this is very different than dog flu. You know, dog flu in the U.S., we've had H3N8 since 2004, and we've only had H3N2 since 2015. So, you know, and even in China and South Korea, where they've had that flu since the mid-2000s, that's not a very long time. You know, now, if left unchecked, if we decide we're not going to get this virus out of our pets, we're not going to proactively vaccinate, and we let dog flu hang around for a while, yes, it is the same RNA-type virus, and it can start developing point mutations to the point that, yeah, we'll probably have some different strains. But for right now, the vaccine for dogs for bivalent flu is it's efficacious. You know, we're not seeing those point mutations that we see in human flu. And, you know, the one thing we are seeing over in China and South Korea, where they've had this flu in their dog population since the mid-2000s, so longer than our, you know, 4 years here in the United States, is we are seeing where we get gene segment swapping. So you're seeing dog flu reassort with swine flu or dog flu, you know, reassort with human flu and making dogs sick. And we don't really know long term, what does that mean? Like, what's the consequence of that? And so for me, it raises the seriousness of, you know, we have a chance to get this out of our dog population through mass vaccination. Why would we not take that opportunity to do that? So we're not living in a world like we do with human flu.
And that would be wonderful, because I get my human flu vaccine every year. And it's like, come on, work and be the right strain. So far, I've been very lucky. The question of whether or not you vaccinate a dog, and people are always, again, I got vaccinated, doc, with a flu vaccine, and I still came down with the flu, or I got the vaccine, and I just felt terrible for a week. I'd rather take my chances. What's the retort to that?
Yeah. So we've not seen, you know, a lot of adverse events with the dog flu vaccine. It's a killed virus vaccine, so not able to replicate and cause disease in the dog. So I sometimes think that helps owners to feel better. I think a lot of times when people get their flu vaccine, you know, I'm going to go get it because I'm going to go get on a plane. Well, I'm probably going to get stressed on that plane. I'm going to get exposed to other things on that plane, and that sort of weakens my immune system. So I think making sure that when it comes to your dog, that we're vaccinating healthy dogs, and we're doing it not at the time that they're stressed, and that would be, you know, less likely for them to have adverse events and to feel bad after vaccine.
You'd mentioned something about gene swapping, or this virus swapping of now it's getting into other types of viruses. So is this a concern that something like canine influenza, is it going to affect people? Is it something that my dog is sitting there with sneezing, coughing? Am I going to get sick?
Right now, that has not been seen at all. What they have found is dogs that have clinical signs in, you know, country where they've had the flu for longer than we've had here in the U.S., when they go to look at the genotype, they're seeing segments from human flu in there and segments from swine flu. And so it tells us that the dog flu has the ability, like any other flu, to what they do, antigenic shift is what it's called, where they can swap out gene segments from different kinds of flus. And, you know, if left unchecked, might that create different flus down the road that could be susceptible? Maybe. I don't think we know that yet. It's too early to say. That's why I'm a huge fan of let's just vaccinate and get rid of this disease. And why wait?
And speaking of waiting, all right, I'm going to be going on vacation. I'm now listening to this podcast going, oh my goodness, I really do need to get my pet vaccinated. You know, my doctor was telling me about canine influenza. I've just said, nah, doc, it's not an issue. And now I'm going to be boarding my dog because I'm going on vacation in 2 days. Do I run in right now and get that vaccine? Is that going to do me any good? Is my dog any good?
You know, obviously, ideally, with a killed vaccine, you're going to get 2 doses in 2 weeks before you travel. But we all know there are those dogs that, hey, I'm boarding tomorrow. And I always say it is never too late to get the immune response started. There was one study looking at, does, you know, one dose buy you any immunity? And it did show that one dose in the dog 7 days before they got exposed to flu did have decreased clinical signs. It didn't keep them from getting sick, but they were less sick than dogs that weren't vaccinated. So I think it's an encouragement to, you know, you have no protection if you don't get vaccinated. So just get started and get the booster when you get back.
Dr. Stasiak, I was reading that the World Health Organization is listing in the top 10 threats for global health in 2019 of vaccine hesitancy. So I know people have such concerns about vaccines causing diseases. You know, there was this movement that it was causing autism. And I've had actually people come in going, I don't want to vaccinate my dog with anything it doesn't absolutely need because I'm afraid of autism in my dog. It's like, I don't think I've ever seen autism in a dog, but I understand their concerns. So a company such as Zoetis, how they approach this and what is the message that you want my podcast listeners to know?
Sure. You know, certainly it is a concern, whether it's people thinking about vaccinating their kids or their dogs, and really the recognition that vaccination is one of the safest forms and most cost-effective forms of medicine that we can deliver, and recognizing that, you know, we're also facing a world of antibiotic resistance. So I'm going to let my dog get sick and then I'm going to have to be using antibiotics. I think for some people that is a reason enough that they would rather use the vaccine over risking getting a disease. And then certainly, you know, getting those diseases, dogs, there's opportunity for wildlife vectors, for diseases like distemper that are going to be in the environment everywhere the dog is. And, you know, making sure that we protect them from these severe diseases that can be fatal for them. The safety of the vaccines, you know, we monitor that, and we know that they're safe and efficacious. And I just remind people of that. I know it's scary. I get it. It's scary when people are making decisions about vaccines for their kids or their pets. But having seen dogs die of these diseases, it is much scarier than the vaccine. And so I just encourage people to trust that pharmaceutical companies, Zoetis, that we have looked at this and we feel the vaccines are very safe and efficacious.
I think that people, another major concern they have is, all right, maybe it's safe, but in the reception area right now, there's this Great Dane that's going to be getting the influenza vaccine. And I have my little poodlet in my lap who's all of 7 pounds. And you're telling me it's getting the same vaccine and the same amount of vaccine? That just doesn't compute. Why do we give the same amount to that 110-pound dog versus the dog that weighs less than 10 pounds?
Yeah. So unlike, you know, medications that we dose by weight, and certainly those guys would get different doses because of how medications are absorbed and delivered to the body, we know for an immune response, which is what you're trying to trigger, it takes a certain amount of showing the immune system that antigen to have it, you know, make the B cells, which are going to make the antibodies and make memory cells so you can respond to later on if you get exposed to that disease, so you have that memory response. That is all works the same. You know, the immune system, it only takes a certain amount of antigen to trigger it, and it doesn't matter what size, whether you're big or little, you know, because the Great Dane people aren't worried that we're underdosing them.
True.
You know, because we know what that amount takes to trigger that immune system, and that's what we put in there.
So, Dr. Stasiak, great information. Any last parting words of wisdom that you want my listeners to know?
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about these common diseases that dogs can get. I just encourage owners to think about if they are vaccinating their dog for Bordetella already, they should be vaccinating their dog for influenza because the risk factors are all the same, and we've seen it all across the country. And certainly protecting our pets so they can go out and live their best social life is always my recommendation, and that's going to be through vaccination.
Sounds fabulous. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Karen Stasiak. She is the veterinary medical lead for biologicals at Zoetis Pet Care. Hopefully you've learned a lot, and if your pet's not vaccinated for canine influenza or these other vaccines, please talk to your veterinarian. See what's most appropriate for your pet. Get it done now because you want your pet to be healthy. And to be healthy, please tune in again next week. We'll give you more information on how you can be that best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.